Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Tzadi Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins four lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, let us glance in our margin where you see the Nosei / Mivneh heading, Nosei, the topic heading, Mivneh structural note, where we've presented a house shape. If you scan ahead in the Gemara text itself, you'll see that the house shape highlights the name Rabbah. So we've written in the margin, Sidra shel halachas shel Rabbah, a series of halachas of Rabbah, Be'inyan ha'odom ha'mazik, regarding a person that causes damage, Ubechalzois poter, and nevertheless, he will be exempt. Me'achar d'chol echod mehem nechshav groma d'nezikin. Because each one of the examples that we'll see are considered groma d'nezikin. What is groma d'nezikin? That's a term that's probably understood best by simply learning the examples. Groma means causative, or it might be translated as indirect damage. The term groma benezikin certainly will be in contrast to a case where someone directly destroys an item of intrinsic value. Someone takes a baseball bat and smashes a glass pitcher belonging to someone. He has done direct nezik. However, imagine someone throws a glass pitcher outside a window 10 stories above a concrete surface. On the concrete surface, at the point that the glass pitcher is expected to land, there are soft mattresses that will cushion the fall. So the individual who threw the pitcher out the window, he did not create a situation of destruction. Someone comes along and removes the mattresses before the glass pitcher hits the concrete surface. As a result of removing the mattresses, the glass pitcher will smash to smithereens. The one who removed the mattresses is called a gorem. He's a causative form of damage, but indirect. He didn't do any action to the item itself, the item of intrinsic value. There are numerous other examples, but what we tried to do just now is to give you an illustration, a sense of what groma benezikin is. The Gemara. Omar Rabbo. The Rabbo name we mentioned will appear in a house form as we go along, and the double underline will highlight the word potter, exemption. In addition, we'll also be squiggle underlining my taimo, what is the reason for these exemptions. So Omar Rabbo, Hazorik matbea shel chaveru li yam hagolo. Someone tosses a coin belonging to someone else into the ocean. Potter. For tossing the coin into the water, he's exempt. My taima. Why is there exemption? Omar, the offender, can say, Ha monach kamoch. The coin is in front of you. E bois shakli, if you want. Go and fetch it. Go and retrieve it. Vahani mili, the ruling of Rabba that there's exemption, is qualified. Bitzlulin, clear water. The kachazile, that you can see it, that it's retrievable. Avol akurin de lo kachazi lelo, But in muddy water, where it's not retrievable, namely you don't see it, so then there won't be innocence. The Tosfos adds a twist on this qualification, and he says that the issue of clear water and muddy water are not to be taken literally, but rather what you are to understand is there accessibility or no accessibility? What do we mean by that? So Tosfos explains, you can have a situation where the coin was tossed into muddy waters, but a diver could retrieve it. That's considered like clear. You can have clear waters, but it's not retrievable for whatever reason. So that would be guilty. So the emphasis is simply on, is it accessible or not? The terms clear and muddy are terms used out of convenience. So now we continue in the Gemara with another qualification. You notice we've dot underlined the expression hani mili. Again, we do that for hani mili, the teaching of Rabbah that there is exemption. De'agya duye, the offender, we said he cast the coin into the sea. He didn't directly take possession of the coin in his hand and toss it into the sea, but rather, Agia Duye Rashi explains, he hit the hand of someone that was holding a coin, and as a result of his hitting the hand, the one holding the coin released the coin into the water. Avol, the Gemara goes on, Avol Shakle Biyode, if the offender took the coin in hand, in his own hand, and tossed it into the water, Migzal Gazle, that's called an act of theft, Hashova Boy Meva, then he has to return the coin. This whole claim, there it is, go and fetch it yourself, would not be applicable. If you do the act of theft, then you have to make a proper, full-fledged return of the item. Mosiv Rava. Rava raises an objection from a source that deals with the redemption of Meiser Sheni. We spoke extensively about this topic in our previous shiur, so as not to be repetitive, by all means, listen to our previous shiur for more information on redemption of Meiser Sheni. So the source tells us, Ein mechalin al mois sheinon birshuso. You are not to redeem the sanctity of the Meiser Sheni produce onto coins that are not in your possession. Ketzad. An illustration. Hoyu lo mois bekastro. Kastro is the name of a place far away. O Bahar HaMelech, name of another place. Oy shenofal kisoy liyam hagodol. Ein mechalin. We have dashed underlined the main point, the point we want to focus on, and that is the monies that one is considering redemption is a pouch of money that fell into the ocean. And the source says you cannot redeem on those. What do we see from here? That when it's in the Yam HaGadol, it's considered lost. It's considered let's say distant from you to the extent that you cannot use it for redemption. So before Rabbo said that cast into the Yam HaGadol, it does not constitute a loss, and the proof being that the one who was responsible for the coins getting into the sea can simply say, there it is, go and retrieve it. Why couldn't the same thing be said over here? Go and retrieve it, and since it's retrievable, you could redeem your Meiser Sheni produce on those coins. Omar Rabbo answers. Rabbo has to defend his position. Sheni, the Inyan Meiser, with regard to Meiser Sheni, the redemption of the produce onto the coins, we apply a higher standard. De Bo'inan Motsui Biyodcha. It has to be literally present in your hands or in your possession. The Rachmona Omar, the Torah says, v'tzarta kesef biyodcha v'leka, which to paraphrase the pasuk, means you're going to redeem the fruits onto cash that's in your hand, in your possession, not something that you still need to retrieve. So that when it comes to matters of, say, monetary concern, if it's retrievable, so the offender, as we described above, is not responsible. If you're dealing with redemption of Meiser Sheni, it has to be, say, more in your possession than just merely retrievable. V'omar Rabo, another example of an action involving, we'll say, an act of depreciation, but will result in non-guilt, an exemption from payment. V'omar Rabo, hashof matbea shel chavero poter. The word shof, Rashi offers a French word for that, and he says, shepiches esatsura, he ruined the image on the coin, the imprimatur. That, for doing that, one is exempt. Why? My time, why is that exempt? Daha lo ovad velo midi. He didn't do anything to the coin itself. But what do you mean? He eliminated the image of the coin. Well, we explain. Bahani mili, demachi bekurnis of vitarshe. He impacted the coin with a cornice, with a hammer, and he made the coin, as a result of banging it with the cornice, he smoothed out the coin surface. That's vitarshe, made it smooth. And as a result, we say that it's true that the coin now will be less, you will not be able to expend it, it won't be accepted in commerce, but his action is called causative, grumma, secondary. As far as the content of the coin, it's all still there. The fact that as a result of the image not being visible anymore, the merchants aren't going to recognize it as a means of commerce, that is what we would call here grumma. Avol, the Gemara goes on, shaifa b'shufina, if you filed down the image, you removed the image through filing the metal, thereby diminishing the metal content, chisure chasre, that constitutes an actual loss, a physical loss. And that we're not going to refer to as groma anymore, but that's direct damage. Mosiv Rava. Well, according to what Rabo said, then we're saying that impact per se is not called direct damage. Well, we have the following source that deals with the laws of freeing a heathen slave. The Torah makes reference to an owner of a slave injuring or removing the limbs of an eved, particularly the Torah makes reference to eye and tooth, shein v'ayin, that might be familiar to some of you. Here we'll make reference to impacting the slave's eye or ear. What happens? So hiko al eino visoma. The owner of the slave hit the slave on his eye and blinded him. Al ozno, on his ear, v'chersho, and deafened him. Eved yotze bohen lecherus. The slave thereby goes free. What we're seeing here then is that even though there's no actual diminishing of anatomical tissue content of the slave himself, an action that was done to the body of the slave is enough to warrant his going free. So that's not called grumma, that's not merely causative or secondary, that's direct damage. Otherwise the slave wouldn't go free. Keneged aino veino roe, if impact was done near his eye and the slave cannot see. Keneged ozno, near his ear, vieno shomea, and lost his power of hearing. Ein eved yotze bohen lecherus. the slave. That's not a sufficient reason for the slave to go free. It wasn't direct impact on the slave himself. So what do we see from this? We see that impact alone, without loss, is considered direct damage. Why then did Rabba say that Hashof Mapesh Chaver is exempt? The Gemara answers, Rabba Letame, Rabba in saying only if there's actual loss is there a culpability, is there liability? Well, Rabba will understand this source consistent with his approach. The Omar Rabba, Chershoy Le'aviv Nerag, a person who deafens his father is subject to execution, court execution. The Torah condemns a child that causes an injury in one's parent. Injury in terms of causing blood flow, a bruise, where there's a blood flow that is a result of a child impacting his parent, the child is executed. So Rabba says that a child who deafens his father is subject to court execution. Why? Deafening doesn't take place unless there's an actual injury. The tips of the Dhamma Noflos Le Be Udne. A drop of blood was released inside the ear. So you see that Rabba is not challenged by the source involving the Eved, so that in the course of deafening the Eved, there is a drop of blood, and that's called a chisara, and that's called causing an actual loss, a direct actual loss, and hence that would be actual damage. However, impacting a coin with a hammer and without diminishing its content is not an actual loss, and that therefore is Rabba's ruling. Therefore, was potter exemption. V'omar Rabba hatsurim oizen parosis shochavero potter. One who creates a notch in his friend's cow's ear is exempt. My taima. Why is there exemption? Answer: poro kidekaima kaima. The cow is still a cow. It remains a cow. It will still function as a cow. If you use it for plowing, it will still plow. If you use it for milking, it will still lactate. The lo avad velo midi. He didn't do anything to diminish the value of the cow by creating a notch in its ear. You'll say, well, now he can't use that cow as a sacrifice, because in fact the notch in the ear constitutes a blemish, rendering it unfit now to be dedicated as a sacrifice. That's still not a claim of loss. The kulu shvorim lav legabi mizbeach kaimi. It is not accurate to say that all oxen are destined to the altar, to the mizbeach, as a sacrifice to begin with. Mosiv Rava. Once again, you can see throughout the series of rulings so far, these first three rulings of Rabba are followed by Rava's challenge. When we get to the fourth ruling, there someone else will challenge. In the meantime, Mosiv Rava, he presents a question, a long question. Ha'oisim alocha b'mei chatos b'poras chatos. One who uses the waters of purification, the mechatas, or waters that are used in the purification of someone who was defiled to the dead. The Torah says that all matters relating to the Paraduma purification process, the red heifer water purification process, will be rendered unfit if they are used for any other purpose. Any personal or mundane use of the waters renders them unfit. So we're describing a situation where one did use the mechatos, or the cow itself, the poras chatos. That's a term referring to the red heifer. Poter midine odom. There is no financial liability in terms of in human terms, in earthly court terms. V'chayov bedine shemayim. He is held accountable though in the heavenly court. Melocha hu delomin kar hezeka. The use of the cow, the red heifer, for work purposes, it's true, it damages the cow in the sense that it's not suitable anymore to be used as the source of the ash for the Efer Pora Duma, which is, as you might recall from Maseches Kiddushin, financially speaking, might represent, in fact, a very great loss. But it's not nicker, it's not recognizable. The cow, after you used it for, let us say, for riding on it, looks no different than the cow before you rode on it. But nevertheless, riding on it is forbidden. It's forbidden in the sense that if you do so, it will be rendered unfit for the Pora Aduma process. Avol, but in contrast with Malacha, that's not visible, Tzorem, making the notch in its ear, the Minkar Hezeka, that it is a recognizable act, Hochi Nami de Mechayev Bedine Adam, that would result in a liability in Dine Odom terms, in earthly court terms. So what about Rabba? Rabba said that one who creates a notch in someone's cow is exempt. It's considered nothing. Here you see that creating a notch is of consequence. Amri, the Gemara responds, Rabba would respond, Hu hadin dafilu tzorein poter. Even making the notch would be exempt from Dine Odom. V'ho komash malon. What this source is trying to emphasize is the following. Dafilu malocha delo minkar hezeka. Even malocha, which is not recognizable, chayov bedine shamayim, is nevertheless held accountable in shamayim terms. Number 4, the Omar Rabba, Hasoref Shtoroi Shel Chaveroi Potter. One who burns the bill of collection. A person had, let us say, lent money to someone, and in exchange for the loan he received a bill of credit, which would enable the lender to collect his debt. This offender comes along and burns that document. He's potter, he's exempt. Di Omar Lei, the mazik, the offender, says, Naira kaloi minoch. Well, all I did was burn paper. I didn't destroy any money. I burned paper. Maskif lo Romi bar Chamo. Heichi domi. Romi bar Chamo questions, asks, on what Rabba said, he asks, what are the circumstances? The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. I de'iko sahadi, di'adi mai have b'shtora. If there are witnesses that could testify as to what was in the document, what amount, what details were in the document, lichtev le'shtor ma'ya, let a new proper shtar be written. V'i de'leko sahadi, anan mino yadinon, if there are no witnesses that could testify as to what the contents of the document were, how would we know? And Rashi adds, so it's obvious that the offender is exempt. What do I need Rabba's din for? Omar Rava. Rava, interestingly enough, here he answers, it appears to be an answer on behalf of what do I need Rabba's din. Up till now, we saw Rava questioning Rabba's halachas. Here, Rava answers, Tehei b'ma'amino. Rashi, on the second line from the top, b'ma'amino, bal hashtar la'soreif, the owner of the document, the lender, grants believability to the burner, to the offender himself. Whatever you say was written, I believe you. I will accept your word. And nevertheless, and this is the chiddush of Rabba. This is Rabba's point. And even so, even though as far as the contents of the shtar, of the document are concerned, there is no question. We, through Ma'amino, through the lenders trusting the Sorev to reveal what was in there, nevertheless, the one who burnt it is exempt. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a new marking, a diamond appears, and on the side we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. The diamond features Machlokes Amoraim, a Amoraic disagreement, E. Reb Shimon Omar Shitaso. The Dover Hagurim Lemomon Kemomon Domi, Al Dover She'ein Ikoroi Momon. The term Dover Hagurim Lemomon is the reference to something that, though it may not have intrinsic value right now, its absence will cause payment to be made. If the item that we described as Dovah Gurm Mamon is present, so then that will save the individual in question from having to pay. In its absence, he will have to lay out money. I know that what we're saying sounds a bit abstract. We'll see. We'll get a better feeling of this as we go through the Gemara. And here, the issue is, does Reb Shimon, who says that a Dovra Gurim Lumomon is considered like Momon, it's considered as if it has value, does he say that even with regard to something that doesn't have any intrinsic value, or that never had any intrinsic value? Now the Gemara. Omar Ravdimi Bar Chanina, Ha de Rabba. That which Rabba said, that one who burns someone else's document, bill of collection, that din is a Machloikis Reb Shimon V'Rabbonan Hi. It's dependent on a Tanaic controversy. The Rabbi Shimon Diomar, Dovar Hagurim Lemomon Kemomon Domi, Mechayev. According to Rabbi Shimon, something that causes a loss of money is viewed as if it is money itself, as if it is of value itself. Now, take a look at this document. The document that was burnt was a document that would have enabled the lender to collect his debt. Now that it's burnt, he won't be able to collect his debt. Now the document itself is paper, but it's a vehicle through which he can collect his debt. So in that sense, we call it a Dovar HaGoreim LeMamon. It causes money to be collected. Is it viewed as the document itself viewed as having value? Well, according to Reb Shimon, yes, because it causes money to be collected, it itself then gains value. So according to Reb Shimon, the one who burns a shtar, who burns a shtar chov, a bill of collection, he'll have to pay the entire debt. L'rabbonon d'amri dovar ha'gurim l'mamon lav k'mamon domi, something that is merely causative but doesn't have intrinsic value, is not assigned money value. So lo mechayev, the one who burnt it is not liable. What did he burn? He burned something that's merely a goreim lemamon. It merely causes or enables money to be collected, but that doesn't grant it, that doesn't instill within it value. Therefore, burning such a thing would be like a Rabba ruled, would be exempt from compensating. Maskifel Rav Huna braid Rav Yoshua. Rav Huna takes issue with Rav Dimi. Amar the Shamis leder Reb Shimon davar gurim lemamon kemamon domi. Granted, Reb Shimon has this idea, has this concept that a davar gurim lemamon is like mammon itself, something that causes money to be transacted, is itself like money. That's bedover shikoro mammon. That's something that was at some time of intrinsic value. We skip the brackets just for a moment to ease the reading. Bedover she'eni koro mamon, mi'am rinon, something that never had intrinsic value. Would Rav Shimon have said his din that it's kemamon dummy? As far as dover she'ikoro mamon, that will be featured within the bracketed section. Something that's eni koro mamon is something like our shtar. It doesn't have intrinsic value. It's a piece of paper. It never had intrinsic value vis-a-vis the value of the loan, the amount of the loan. So would Reb Shimon have gone so far as to say that even something like that is treated like value? So as far as Rav Huna is concerned, the din of Rabbah is not a machlokes tanoim, just like the Rabbanon exempt, because it's merely a dover hagorim lemamon. Reb Shimon also, with regard to the shtar, because it's eini koro mamon, would also exempt. Now let's go over the bracketed section. Within the brackets, we see an example of that's something that's ikoro mamon, concerning which Reb Shimon would say is kimamon, kida rabba, the yoma rabba. Gozal chometz lifnei haPesach. A thief stole a loaf of bread before Pesach. Uvo achir v'sorfo. Someone else came and burnt the stolen bread. Bamoe, if he burnt it at the time that everyone is involved with burning chometz, Potter, he is exempt for having burnt the bread. Shakol mitzuvin olav levaro. Everyone is commanded to eliminate chometz, to eliminate bread and chometz products. Li'achar haPesach, that loaf of bread, the stolen loaf of bread, was burnt by the second party. He burnt the stolen loaf after Pesach. After Pesach is not a time that everyone is involved with burning chometz. Obviously, Pesach has passed. And now you have this stolen loaf of bread that that was stolen from before Pesach. And now the sorev, the one that comes to burn it, burns it after Pesach. Machloikis Reb Shimon v'Rabbonan. Now, let us point out something, that chometz that existed throughout Pesach, let's say Jewish-owned chametz, throughout Pesach, when Pesach passes, it is forbidden. It's called chometz she'ovar olav haPesach. So it doesn't have any market value right now after Pesach. Someone came and burnt that valueless loaf of bread. Is he guilty for burning it? This will be a machlokes Reb Shimon v'Rabbonan. Let us ask ourselves a question before we go on. Now that the Pesach has passed, can the thief give the loaf of bread back to the owner and thereby be exempt? Here, I gave you back your bread. If he would be exempt by returning that loaf of bread, can you imagine what would be if someone destroys that loaf of bread? What is the thief going to do now? Well, the thief is going to have to pay out of his pocket the cost of a loaf of bread. The presence of this loaf of bread, namely before it's burnt, actually enables the thief to save on paying out a loaf of bread. So this loaf of bread that right now, in fact, is valueless because it's chometz shovar v'Pesach, its presence enables the ganav, the thief, to save himself money. What we just described is a davar hagoreim lemamon. The loaf of bread causes money, meaning its absence will cause the thief to lay out money to compensate the victim of the theft. Now, we have to deal with the liability of the one who came and burnt the stolen bread. So Rabbah is telling us that if the bread was burnt after Pesach, you have a machlokis Reb Shimon Rabbanon. Are we to find guilty the one that burnt it? The Rabbi Shimon di Omar Dovar Hagurim Lamamon Kemamon Domi Chayav. According to Reb Shimon, that views items that though they don't have current value, but they cause money to be paid out. Someone out comes and burns that loaf of bread. He is chayef. He has to pay for it. The rabbanon diamri davar hagurim lemamon lav kemamon dami. The rabbanon say, though the loaf of bread is a causative factor regarding money, that does not instill within it actual value. And therefore, the one who burns it, potter, will be exempt. So as far as Reb Shimon and his point of view, that Dovar Gorim Lumamon Kimamon Domi, he would say that regarding something that initially had intrinsic value. However, B'Dovar Sheini Koro Mamon, something like the Shtar, Mi Aminon, would Reb Shimon say that it's considered like Mamon? And therefore, as we said before, Rabbah's din, Hasurv Shtor Shachavero, Potter, is something that even Reb Shimon could agree with. Omar Amemar, Man Dedoin Dino de Garmi. Here's an expression concerning which there's a significant amount of halachic literature in defining Garmi. For our purposes, just to keep things simple, we're going to associate garmi with the general realm of, we'll say, causative damage, but not actual direct destruction of that which has intrinsic value. Dina de garmi, for those who want to pursue it, define it, in contrast or in comparison with another term very, very similar, goreim, groma benezikin, I recommend highly looking at the Rosh commentary, Simen Yud Gimel. In the middle of that paragraph, he points out several differences between what we call garmi and groma benezikin. But for our purposes, let us just use an illustration or partial illustration to give a sense of difference. We mentioned before someone throwing out a glass pitcher from 10 stories above a concrete floor that had mattresses lying there. Someone else came along and removed the mattresses. And as a result of removal of the mattresses, the glass pitcher will smash to smithereens. The one who removed the mattress is called a goreim, he's a groma. He's causative, but notice that his action was not focused or directed on the item itself. His action was an action of removing mattresses. The result was that the pitcher smashed, but the one, let's say, responsible for the ultimate damage did nothing to the item itself. In the case of garmi, we will have the offender doing damage to the item directly. However, the item itself is not something that had intrinsic value. So that Amemar says, Man didoin dina de garmi, he who prosecutes cases of garmi, in the case of one who burns the shtar, magvi bay demei shtar amalyo, he will collect from the burner, he will find libel, the one who burnt a shtar, the entire amount that was written in the shtar. The burning of the shtar causes the lender to lose his power of collection. So you caused him to lose his power of collection, you have to pay, you have to compensate the value of the shtar. Uman delo doin dino degarmi, and he who does not find libel cases like that, as we indicated before, Rabbah seemed to rule like this, that we don't don dina degarmi, at least in this context. What was burnt was something, what was destroyed, though the offender did his destructive act directly on the item, however, the item didn't have intrinsic value. So there are those that don't prosecute cases like that. That's man delo doin. Doin means to judge. Delo doin dina degarmi. Magvi be demei manario biamo. He'll collect from the one that burnt it the cost of a piece of paper. Havi uvdo. There was an incident. The kafye rafrom l'rav ashi. Rafrom forced Rav Ashi. Rashi explains that in his youth, Rav Ashi once burnt someone's shtar. That might sound a little odd, odd behavior or whatever, but so be it. There's another twist to this. If you want to research it further in the commentary of the Rabbeinu Yehoinoson found in the Shita Mekubetzes. For those who want to check it out further, I recommend looking that up. But Rashi and other commentaries take this approach, that Rav Ashi in his youth burnt someone's shtar. Rafrom forced Rav Ashi to offer compensation. Before we translate, we'll simply say that Rav Ashi forced Rav Ashi to offer full compensation for the document that he had burnt in his youth. The translation of the Agvi Bey means he caused the collection of or the payment of money. Ki kshura letzama. Kshura is a beam. Letzama for a beam that's suitable for carving out images. A beam that is suitable for that is a high quality beam. It has to be fit for the work of a wood sculptor. It's an expression, it's a metaphor for full payment. We continue in the Gemara with a quote from the Mishnah. Chometz v'ovar lova Pesach. A person stole chometz and Pesach went by. Omer lo, the thief can say after Pesach harei shelcha lefanecha. Here, take your chometz back. Chometz, after Pesach, is in the realm of that which is forbidden to benefit from. It's called Isurei Hano. The Gemara opens up with a question, Man Tana Oymen B'Isurei Hano Harei Shechol Lefanecha. Who is the Tana that says, when it comes to items that essentially have no value, they're forbidden to benefit from, but the thief can say, take it back as it is. The idea of take it back or restoration has application not only in the case of theft but also in the case of a shomer, a person that was given an item to watch, and the time comes now that he has to return it. So the concept of hareisha chofenach, here take your item back, has applications beyond the realm of theft. I say that by way of introduction to a source that we're going to see shortly. But before we get into the Gemara, let's take care of some structural matters. On the side, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, we've highlighted with a bow tie two words that I feel are key words in the upcoming discussion. The words chometz, and the chometz spoken of is chometz she'ovar lo pesach, and the word shor that you see shortly in more text as well. It's a shor shehemus. It's a shor that killed somebody. A shor that killed someone, there's There's something in common between Chomesh Rav HaPesach and Eshor Shehemis. They're dugmois, they're examples, shel yisurei anon, they're things that you cannot benefit from. They're usur to benefit from. The house marking, you'll notice in our Gemara itself, you see Rav Chisda has such a marking, and later Rabba. On the side, we've written that this represents a machlokes amoroyim, a Tanaic disagreement regarding Mantana Demri Bisuranoa, Reishel Chalfanach. Who is the author of that idea? Who would hold by that idea that when it comes to items forbidden to benefit from, when their return is necessary, it is sufficient for the item itself to be given back and not, let's say, some cash payment reflecting the item before it became forbidden to benefit from. So we will see Rav Chisda. He takes the approach that it's a singular Tanaic authority. It's the opinion of Rav Yankiv. Rabba later says, no, the idea of by Yisur HaNol, you can say HaRei Shecholof HaNecho, is something that is unanimous. Unanimous in terms of the Tanoim at hand, namely Rav Yankiv and the Rabbanon. Those are the names that will be relevant in this discussion. So just to repeat, Rav Chisda thinks it's a singular opinion, maybe a minority opinion, and according to Rav Chisda, it's a unanimous opinion. That when it comes to Yisur HaNol, you can say HaReisha Chalof HaNecho. Well, if Rav Chisda said that it was a minority opinion, a single opinion, that means that he was arguing with others. And as far as Rav Chisda was concerned, their argument is this topic of, can you say by Yisur HaNol, HaReisha Chalof HaNecho? With regard to Rabba, who says it's unanimous, then he'll have to explain what was the Machlokes Tanoim all about, if not a Machlokes concerning by Yisrael No, can you say HaRei Shel Chalof HaNecho? According to Rabba, their Machlokes must have been concerning some other issue. We now turn to the Gemara. There's another marking. We'll say it now. Maybe it's a bit premature, but the volcano shape that you see is it our Hezberim L'machlokes Tanakama of Rabbi Yankiv? It's the respective explanations of Rav Chisda and then later Rabba as to what the Tanoim, Rabbi Yankiv, and the Chachamim are arguing over. What's the Hezber? What's the explanation of their Machlokes, of the Machlokes Tanoim? Okay, now the Gemara. We opened with the question of who is the Tana that would hold that by Yisur HaNol, that when it comes to items that have become forbidden to benefit from, like it taught in our Mishnah, that a person who stole chametz and Pesach went by, the thief can say, take your bread back. Omer Rav Chisda, notice there's a long marking. Rabbi Yankiv, this is the opinion of Rabbi Yankiv. Tisanya, and now another example of Yisur HaNol. Shor Shehemis, an ox that killed a person. Ad shelo nigmar dino, if we're at a point in time before the court came to a verdict, the issue of an animal that killed someone is something that is subject to court adjudication. Witnesses have to come forth with whatever relevant information is necessary. So before the verdict is handed in, mochroi mochor, if the owner sells it, it's a legitimate sale. Hegdesho mukdash, if he dedicates it to the Beis HaMikdash, it's a dedication. Shachtoi, if he slaughters it, besoro mutar, the meat is acceptable. It's we'll call it, it's kosher. Let's say that this animal was in the possession of a shomer, of a bailey, and it had killed someone, and it was not the final verdict was not handed in yet. If the shomer returns the animal, the shomer who had this animal in his possession it became it had killed someone, he fulfills his obligations of return to the owner by giving it back. However, Mishenigmar Dino, if after the if we're at a point in time where the animal was condemned, the verdict was handed in, Mochro Eino Mochro, the sale of such an animal is not a legitimate sale. It's not a sale. Ikdisho Eino Mukdosh, sanctifying it would not result in its gaining sanctity. Shachto, if the owner would slaughter it at this point, Basaro Osir, the meat would be forbidden to benefit from. Hechziru Shemer Labailov Eino Mukhsir. According to the first opinion in this source, if the Shomer returns an animal that, while in his possession, it killed, and the court ruled that the animal is to be itself killed, that's the penalty for a murderous ox. If the verdict has been handed in, the Shomer, the guard, the Bailey, won't be able to get away and say, here, take your animal back. That's Eino Mukhsir. It's not considered a return. Rabbi Yankiv Oimer, Ach Mishenigmar Dino, Hechziru Shomer Labailov Mukhsar. According to Rabbi Yankiv, even after the Gemar Din, even after the verdict has been handed in, which, by the way, if it wasn't obvious till now, let me say it explicitly, the animal now becomes Osir Bahano, becomes forbidden to benefit from, the Shomer, in returning it, has fulfilled his obligations. My lav baha koifligi. Is it not so that it's in the following that Rabbi Yankiv and the Tanakama disagree? The Rabbi Yankiv savar oimrim bi sure hano hare shelcha lefanecha. When it comes to matters that have become forbidden to benefit from, the item itself, though it doesn't have any intrinsic value anymore, its return can its own very return is considered legitimate. For Rabbonon Savri, Ein Omrim Beisura No Hare Shel Chalof Anachan. The Rabbonon take the opinion that no, that when someone owes something, but it's become forbidden to benefit from, that individual that has a debt to return it won't fulfill his obligation at this point, because it's become Osir Bahano. What are you returning? You're returning something of no value. Omar Le Rabo. Rabbo says to Rav Chisda, lo, your analysis is not correct. Rather, the Kulei Alma, everyone, the Rabbi Yankiv and the Tanakama, will tell you, Amrinon Bisur Hano, Hare Shochol Afanecho. Even the Rabbonon, who in the case of the murderous animal said, Eino Mukhsar, will say that in general, when it comes to Isure Hano, you can say, Hare shel chafanecha, you take your item back. De'im Cain, because if that wasn't the case, but they argued over it, niflegu b'chametz b'pesach. Let Rav Yankiv and the Rabbanan argue over chametz b'pesach as well. But they don't argue over that case, the case of chametz b'pesach. Their argument is limited to the case of the murderous animal. So, according to Rabbo, then what is the explanation of the machlokes tanoim? Elo omar Rabbo, hocha, here in the Tanaic source regarding the shor shehemis, the argument is concerns the following idea: begoimrim dino shel shor shelo b'fonov komifligi. Can the court issue a verdict over an animal that's not present in the court? Rabbonon Savri, Ein Gomrim Dino Shoshor Shelo Bafonov. A verdict concerning a murderous animal cannot be made in its absence. The Omar Lay, the owner of the animal, can say to the guard, E I see say ni hale, had you returned the animal to me instead of handing it to the court. Had you returned the animal to me, have marikno le la agmo, I would have chased it out, I would have enabled the animal to go out into the agma. The agma, into the fields, into the marshes. And in the absence of the animal, the court would not have been able to render a verdict. Hashta, but now what did you do? Masarte biadman de lo motzino lashtuye dino bade. In the meantime, though, you didn't give it back to me. You gave it to the court. That's someone that I don't have the power to argue against. So that the shomer, who had this murderous ox, and while in his possession, the shomer enabled the court to rule over it. In other words, the shomer brought the animal to the court, and they prosecuted and they rendered the verdict that it's guilty. At this point, the shomer, according to the Tanakhama, he can't give the animal back to the owner. The owner has a claim against the shomer. Why did you enable the court to prosecute and issue a verdict? You should have given the animal back to me, and I would have created a situation where the verdict never would have been able to be handed in, and I would have benefited from my animal. So don't try to offer me the animal now after you enabled it to reach its condemnation. From Yankiv Sovar, Rabbi Yankiv, who says that the shomer who enabled the court to reach its verdict can now give the animal back to the owner and he's fulfilled his obligations, holds Rabbi Yankiv Sovar Gomrim Dino Shelshor Shelo Bafonov. The court could have prosecuted the animal even in its absence. The Omar Lay, the shomer's response to the owner is as follows. My Avdi Lay, what did I do? Sof. If you're bothered by the fact that I enabled the court, I gave the court, I presented the animal to the court to prosecute it, sof, at the end of the day, Hava Gamri Lay Dino Shalobavonov, the court could have prosecuted it and rendered the guilty verdict even in its absence. So I didn't cause you any loss by not returning the animal to you prior to the verdict. Therefore, take it back. And he's, according to Rabbi Yankiv, since Gomrim Dino Shesher Shelo Bafonov, the Shomer is able to give the animal back as it is. But once again, let's repeat the main point. As far as Rabbah is concerned, the disagreement between Rabbi Yankiv and the Tanakhama and the Rabbonon, the Tanakhama, who's the Rabbonon, their disagreement is highly focused on the issue of the murderous ox. But in general, regarding Isurei Hanoh, can they be returned as a means of fulfilling a thief's obligation of returning a stolen item? All of these Tanoim, Rabbi Yankiv and the Chachomim will agree with the Mishnah's ruling of Harei Shechol Lefanecha. Ashkichei Rav Chisda L'Rabba Bar Shmuel. Rav Chisda, who was of the opinion that Isur Hanoh, not everyone says Harei Shel Cholafanecha, so Rav Chisda met up with Rabba Bar Shmuel, Omale, Tonis Midi B'Isur Hanoh, do you have any Tanaic sources concerning the matter of Isurei Hanoh, items that are that you are prohibited to benefit from? Omalayin, so Rabba Bar Shmuel says, yes, I happen to have a Tanaic source for you. Tanina. I say for you means for you to hear. You're going to see shortly that this source doesn't agree with Rav Chisda's analysis, but it says in the following source, Veheshivis Hagzela, Matam Loma Sher Gozal. The verse says, Veheshivis Hagzela Sher Gozal. There's redundancy in the pasuk. It says that you shall return the item of theft. And then it says, Asher Gozal, that you stole. Do you need to tell me that extra expression, Asher Gozal? So what does Asher Gozal tell me? Answer, Yachsir Ke'ain Sher Gozal. You are to return the item as it was when it was initially stolen. Mikan Omru, based on this we say, Gozal Matbeav Nifsal. if someone stole a coin and it was voided, peres v'rkivu, he stole fruits and they rotted, yayin v'hichmitz, or v'hikrim, wine that went bad, truma v'nitmes, he stole truma and became defiled, chometz, he stole chometz v'orva arlov ha-pesach, and Pesach went by, behema v'nevdo ba'avera, someone stole an animal and used it for bestiality. The use of an animal in bestiality renders the animal prohibited to benefit from. Vishar ad shelo nigmar dino, or an ox that killed someone, but we're at a point in time where the verdict has not been reached regarding its having committed the murder. Omer lo, the thief can say, Hare shechol lefanecha, regarding all of these examples, take it back. In other words, I stole them. Right now, they have no value. He can say, take it back as it is. Man shamis le diomar ad shelo nigmar dino in, mishen nigmar dino lo. Who is the Tanaic authority that makes a distinction between prior to the verdict versus after the verdict? I hope it's somewhat familiar. This was a point we saw above in the Tanaic source after Rav Chisda appeared. And who is the author of the one that would make a distinction that before the Gemar Din, its return is legitimate? After the Gemar Din, the return is not legitimate. Rabbonon. This is in accordance with the Rabbonon as opposed to Rav Yankiv. So we have a Tanaic source with numerous examples, although there's no name. We now have identified it as the Rabbonon. Why is it not Rav Yankiv? Because according to Rav Yankiv, whether it's before the Gemar Din or after the Gemar Din, you can say Harei Shelcha Lefanecha. It's only the Rabbanon that made that distinction. Fikotoni, and it says in this source, Chometz Vavla Pesach Omer Lo Harei Shelcha Lefanecha. This is when it comes to Chometz, and Pesach went by. You can say, here, take it back. So what do we have then? We have a source that's authored not by Rav Yankiv. It's authored by the Rabbonon. And you have an example of Isurei Hanah, the case of Chometz Pesach, the case that opened up this section of Gemara. And who is saying Harei Shelcha Lefanecha? Not only Rav Yankiv would say that, but even the Rabbonon are saying that. So as far as Isurei Hanah, Harei Shelcha Lefanecha, everyone says you can do that. That certainly is not pleasant for Rav Chisda to hear. Omar Lei, so Rav Chisda said to Rabba Bar Shmuel, "I meshkachas lehu, if you find them, if you meet up with them," the Rashi says, "Bnei HaYeshiva," the other Torah scholars, "Lo tema lehu v'lamidi," don't say anything to them, don't reveal this to them. So you might be asking, what is this, some kind of cover-up over here? So Rashi says, in three lines from the bottom, Rashi says, Mishum dechadu demishkechi tiyufta lemilsi. There's an element of human nature here, and that is that when you have opponents in an argument, if one side is proven to be wrong or inaccurate, it's the cause of joy on the part of those that disproved their opponent. Now, that element of joy is itself problematic. We know from the special prayer that we recite upon entering Torah study that we pray that we shouldn't make any mistakes, and that those around us should not be joyful. As I mentioned, that that in and of itself is a problem. So Rav Chisda was trying to prevent others from, say, stumbling on this sinful attitude of being joyful when someone makes a mistake. So he said, "Look, you have a Tanaic source that's quite clearly against my opinion, but don't reveal it, because if you do, they might be happy, and that's something that's not acceptable." We continue in the Gemara. Peros v'hirkivu oimer lo areshel chalafanecha. The Mishnah said if someone stole fruits and they rotted, the thief can say, "Take them back." We have another Tanaic source that says Paris, a fruit that was stolen and rotted, the thief has to pay their value at the time of the theft. Not the Harei Shel Chofanach, or take it back. Omer Rabba, Rabba says there's no contradiction. Kan Shirkivu Kulon, Kan Shirkivu Mitzasan. In the case that Hirkivu rotted, Kulon, all of them, if they all rotted, then you pay Kishasag Zela. If only there was partial rotting, so then you can say Hare Shelcha Lefanecha. The Mishnah. We have a brief topic heading on the side. Uman Shekilkel, a craftsman that ruined the item. Nosan Leumnin, the Mishnah says, Letakein. Someone gave an article to a craftsman to repair. Filkilkulu, and they ruined it. Chayovan l'shalim, they must offer compensation. Nosan l'chorosh shido tevu migdal l'sakein, you gave to a chorosh, a carpenter, a shido tevu migdal, different kinds of boxes, closets, containers, wooden containers, and you gave one of these to a carpenter to repair. The kilkil, and he ruined it. Chayov l'shalim, he must offer compensation. V'habanoi, a builder, she kibel olav listor zakei, so who accepted the job of raising a wall, of knocking down a wall, v'shiber ho'avonim, and in the course of doing so, he also cracked the stones, o she hizikon, or he damaged them, chayav l'shalem, he must pay. In other words, the job was simply to remove a wall, but to preserve the stones that formed the wall. Hoyosoyser mitzad ze venofal mitzad achir poter. He was knocking down the wall from one side and it fell to another side. I guess we would say it wasn't planned that way. He is exempt. V'im machmas hamak chayav. However, if this situation developed because of his impact, because of the way he hit the wall, and not some kind of, we'll say, just some kind of initial structural phenomenon, but because of it, of his hitting of it, his impacting it, he has to pay. He has to bear responsibility. We have a topic heading, and also an indication that this is a very long topic. It will go till Daf Tzadi Tes Amud Beis. So as far as completing the topic within the course of today's shiur, that is not likely. So we'll have to we'll start the topic, but on Tzadi Tes Amud Aleph, we will end up having to stop in the middle of the discussion. What is the topic? Ravasi Sover, Ravasi holds, Ha de Machayvin on Uman Shekilkel, that which we hold the craftsman responsible for his damaging, Hainu Rak im Nosnu lo Chefetz Gomu Lisakin, Vahu Kilkeloi. That's only when a complete article was given to the craftsman and he ruined it, Aval. There's another situation for which he won't be responsible. Im Nosnu Uman Aitzim, Litzor Mehem Kli. You gave raw material, you gave wood to a craftsman. You gave some slats of wood, boards of wood to a carpenter to fashion from them a vessel. Yotzarakli, he formed the vessel. He fashioned the item. V'achar kach kilkel, and then ruined it. Potter, he is exempt. Milishalim lebalo eitzim. He doesn't have to pay the value of a of a complete closet or the chest of drawers to the owner of the wood. The uman kine b'shvach kli. The uman, the craftsman, is said to acquire the vessel as a result of the improvements that he made in it. He took raw wood, improved it to being a chest of drawers. He thereby acquires it. The craftsman acquires it. And therefore the subsequent ruination on his part is something that's quite personal. In other words, he ruined his own article. Therefore, he's not obligated to pay the owner of the wood. As far as the value of the initial wood is concerned, that's not what we're focusing on now. What we're focusing on is the necessity or lack thereof of paying the owner of the wood for the chest of drawers. So as far as Rav Asi is concerned, there will be liability only if the craftsman was presented a complete chest of drawers that needed some minor repairs, and the craftsman ruined them. But if the artisan was given raw material from which to fashion a complete item that he then subsequently ruined, the artisan is not responsible to compensate for that. Now we will see the Gemara. Amar Rav Asi, lo shanu ela. Rav Asi qualifies the Mishnah's teaching and says that the Mishnah that taught that the uman is chayav to compensate, that is restricted, it's limited. Ela shenosan lechorosh shidotevo migdal lenaitz when masmer. You gave to the artisan one of these containers in order to lenaitz when masmer, to bang into it a nail. Venoatz when masmer v'shibron, and he banged the nail into the bureau and he cracked it and he ruined it. Avol nosan lechorosh eitzim lasois shidotevo migdal. However, if the artisan was given raw materials, namely was given wood, in order to fashion from them a shida teva umigdal, one of these containers. The also man shida teva umigdal v'shibron, and he made the shida teva or migdal and then broke it. Potter, the artisan is exempt. My time. Why is he exempt? Answer: uman kene b'shvach kli. The artisan is said to acquire it. He becomes the owner of it through the improvement that he created. Tanan. We quote from the beginning of our Mishnah. Nosan l'umnin v'kilkalu chayovin l'shalem. The Mishnah describes giving to artisans who subsequently ruined the item. They have to compensate. My love. Is it not so? D'yoyev lu eitzim. And this would then be a question on Rav Asi, that the Mishnah describes giving raw wood to the artisan who fashioned an article, who then ruined it, and he does have to compensate, contrary to Rav Asi. Lo, that's not the understanding of the Mishnah. Rather, shido tevu migdal, you gave to the artisan a complete item, and he ruined that. Question, but ha midikotani seifa shido tevu migdal. The continuation of the Mishnah describes the shida tevum, the complete article. Michlal de Reisha, the opening of the Mishnah, eitzim, is something else. Why would there be the need to repeat the same thing? So if shida tevum migdal are specified in an explicit fashion in the Mishnah, what the Reisha then is obviously talking about something else. It's talking about the artisan giving raw material and fashioned a vessel, ruined it, and yes, he is obligated to compensate, and that's a problem for Rav Asi. No, the Gemara answers, Amri, Pirushi kamaforish law. The Mishnah does not feature two different examples. Rather, the Mishnah has an opening that's vague, and the explanation to the opening is that which follows in the Shido Tevo Migdal. As follows, Pirushi Komeforish Law, the Mishnah will say it has a built-in, built-in explanation to the opening. Ketzad Nosan Umin Takin Vikul Chayavim L'Shalem, the Mishnah that opened up with saying that one who gives to an artisan to repair and he messed up, the artisan has to compensate. How is that to be understood? Kagain Shenosan Lechora Shido Tevo Migdal. If the artisan was given a complete product to repair and he messed that up, only then would the artisan be chayav, obligated to compensate for the ruination. But if he was given raw wood and he created a vessel and then ruined that, he's exempt, just like Ravasi, because Uman Kaina b'shvach kli, the Uman, the artisan, Kona, he acquires b'shevach kli. Shevach kli is the shevach, means the improvement that he made in the vessel. That he made by creating the vessel. Well, with this answer having been said, the Gemara goes on to say, v'hochi nami mistabra. Now, I want to point out, for those who are not familiar with many dapim of Gemara, when you see this expression, v'hochi nami mistabra, the Gemara then tries to offer a logical basis for the answer that was just given. Very often, most often, when you see this expression, there might be some rare examples, rare exceptions, but when you see this expression, you can anticipate that it will be questioned or rejected. That's going to happen over here. First, we suggest, yeah, this is a logical way of looking at the Mishnah. And then two lines from the bottom, the Gemara is going to reject that. I just want to point out that the rejection is certainly a rejection of the attempt to show how the answer was logical. It doesn't necessarily mean that we reject the answer that we gave, but we're rejecting the analysis of the answer. But in the meantime, we say v'hochinam istaba, the explanation that of the Mishnah, namely that it opens up with a general statement that is explained by the Mishnah, and hence the Mishnah has only, with regard to the wood, is only one case, namely a complete product was given to the carpenter. It is also v'chinam mistabro de ketzad kotoni. It's also logical that the Mishnah is in that form of ketzad, an explanatory form. If you were to think like we thought beforehand, that the artisan was given raw wood, created a vessel and then ruined it, he's obligated to compensate. So, you're telling me that even in that case, where the artisan wasn't even given a ready-made vessel, and still he has to compensate for its ruination, and you don't say something that you might have very well argued, and we don't claim that the artisan acquires through the creation, through the improvement he made in the vessel. So there you have a case where it was room to think that he should be exempt, and yet you say he is liable. Shida tevo migdal mi baya. In a case where he's given a complete vessel to repair and he ruins that, do I need to tell you there that he's liable? That's obvious. So why would the Mishnah tell me the obvious? Therefore, it must be that the Mishnah is not teaching two cases, one which has a chiddush and the next one the obvious, but the Mishnah is teaching me only the case of shida tevo migdal. But the case of an artisan given the raw wood and ruins the vessel that he creates, in fact, he would be exempt. And that is good for Ravasi. The Gemara says, "E mishum ha lo irya." If it's because of this, namely the otherwise seeming statement of the obvious as proof that the Mishnah is featuring only one case, well, ha lo irya, that's not proof. Here we're rejecting what we said, Hochi Nami Mistabro, two lines ago. Tana Seifa Ligluye Resha. This is an alternative Mishnah style that we view as acceptable. The Tana teaches the case of Shido Tevo Migdal in the Seifa to shed light, Ligluye, to reveal, to shed light on the Resha, on what the Resha is discussing. Shelo Tomar, that you should not think Resha Shida Tevo Migdal, the Resha, so that you should not think that the Reisha, which speaks about Nosan Umin Vesakiv Kukul Chayovin, is talking about a craftsman given a ready-made vessel, and ruination of that results in liability. Avol Eitzim Lo, but if he was given raw wood, he would not be liable upon the ruination of the vessel he creates. So that you shouldn't think that Tana Seifa, the Seifa says explicitly Shiva Tevel Migdal. There in the Seifa you can see the Mishnah deals with the ready-made vessel and its ruination leading to liability. Michlal, the Reisha, must be then the Reisha is talking about something else. Eitzim. It's talking about the artisan given the raw wood. And even though he fashioned from it a complete vessel, but he ruined it, we don't say that Uman Kine B'Shvach Kli. And let's just to repeat that. And we don't say that the artisan acquires the vessel for himself through the improvement that he made. And therefore, since we don't say that, even in the case of Eitzim, the artisan will be chayev to compensate for the vessel that he created and ruined. Lemo misayale. You'll see a new marking, a crown shape on the side of the under our mivneh heading. We indicate that these crowns are nisyonis on the one hand, lisaya l'ravasi, and the inverted crown will be lahakshis al ravasi. So that at this point in the Gemara, so we're going to try to support Ravasi. You'll see on the next Omid, very shortly, about of a quarter of the way down from the top, an inverted crown shape where we will be questioning Ravasi. So at this point we say, Lemo Mesayale, can we say, we present this, by the way, as a long question, as can we say that the following Taneg source supports Ravasi? Hanoisein tsemer tsemer latzabo. One presented wool to a tzabo. If you're familiar with the word tseva or tzvaim, colors, so this is someone who dyes wool. We'll call him a dyer, D-Y-E-R, if I'm not mistaken. He gave the wool to a tzabo. We continue at the top of Tzadi Tesam and Aleph. V'higdichoi Yoyre. The word higdicho literally has to do with something that gets burnt. In this case, the wool, while getting dyed, was ruined. Yoyre. Yoyre literally is the pot. Rashi at the top says higdicho yoyre niskalkel hatseva me'atzmoi. Something went on its own. It went bad. The source continues and says Noisei lo demei tzimro. So the craftsman here, the professional, he pays the owner of the wool the value of the wool. Demei tzimro in the value of the wool. Yes, demei tzimro shvachalo, but the value of the wool plus its improvement, that's not paid. Lav shegdicho liachar nefila. Is it not so that we're talking about a case that the ruination took place a while after the wool was put into the pot? The pot is a pot in which the dyes are boiling and will be expected to be absorbed into the wool. So are we not in fact talking about a case where the higdicho, the ruination took place after the wool was put into the pot? The ikoshvacha, in the interim, the wool actually became improved. It became improved then, and then subsequently got ruined. And what do we see by way of payment? He pays only for the value of the original raw wool. Ushma mina, from this you see, uman kine bishvachli, the artisan, acquires the vessel at the point that it reaches improvement. So in the case of the wool, the dyer became the owner, so to speak, of the dyed wool. So what got ruined afterwards was his own wool that got ruined. You see from here like Rav Asi mentioned at the outset, that in the event that the artisan creates the vessel and then subsequently ruins it, he's not obligated to compensate for the improved version. And all of this is a function of Uman Kaina Bishmachli. The Uman, the artisan, acquires the vessel through the improvement that he created in it. Omar Shmuel Shmuel says, no, there's no support. This source, it got ruined at the time it was put into the pot. There was no stage of actual improvement. So we don't see from here Uman Kaina Bishmachli, because there's no shevach to speak of. Well, according to this, then we can infer, Avol Higdichai Li'achar Nefila Mai, if, let's say, the ruination of the wool took place after shevach was achieved, then what would you say? Noisein Loi Demei Tzimro Ushvacho? Are you suggesting then that the artisan would have to pay not only for the value of the wool, but the value of the wool with its improvement? Lema Shmuel less later Rav Asi, should we then conclude that Shmuel does not hold from Rav Asi's teaching? Rav Asi, under those circumstances, would have said the Uman is exempt because Uman kaine b'shvach kli. Omar loch Shmuel. Shmuel says, don't come to that conclusion. Hocha b'mayaskinon. The source involving the dyer is the following. Kagon de tzemer v'samonim de baal habayis. The wool and the dyes, all of the materials belonged to the owner of the wool. Vitzaba, the dyer, agar yodehu deshokil. Agar is an Aramaic word like the word schar, fee. The tzaba is, we call it a sochir ba'alma. He's a person that's hired to work, we'll say like work by the hour. He's not hired and paid by the job, but rather he's paid on a time basis. Well then, ihachi noisein lo demeid simro v'samonim miboyalei. If you have simply a hired hand that was given materials, all the materials were provided by the owner of the wool, then and he ruins them, he should pay the value of the wool and the cost of dyes. That's what it should have said, but it doesn't say that in the source. Ela Shmuel duchuye komadchile. Shmuel in this discussion is simply trying to deflect the source as being a definitive proof to Rav Asi. But we can't draw any solid conclusions from what Shmuel is saying here. Rashi says, "D'chuyeh matchilei klomar mimasnisen lo tesayeh." From the Tanaic source with the dyer, you can't support Rav Asi. But not to come to the conclusion that Shmuel argues with Rav Asi. All Shmuel is trying to do in this discussion is to suggest that the source doesn't provide solid proof to Rav Asi. Now, we're in the middle of a discussion, but in the context of our Daf Yomi structure, we will pause here. We'll Mitzvah Shem pick up next time with this inverted crown shape, and our sincere hope is that what we've learned till now serves as the introduction, thereby when we pick up the next year we will not need to engage in too much background discussion. So, but before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.